Let's rock and roll. Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order today. We have two items on our agenda, and we will open with a public hearing on Senate Bill 610.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 610 deals with transportation, school transportation costs in terms of what costs are eligible to be included in approved transportation costs for inclusion in the school equalization formula as part of that transportation grant. Last session, a bill was passed that excluded monies received by a school district to repair, refit, or replace school buses that had the intent of reducing or eliminating diesel engine emissions. And it also excluded any transportation costs paid by with funds from the Clean Diesel Engine Fund. What this bill does is to continue to exclude funds from the Clean Diesel Engine Fund that are used for retrofitting, et cetera, but it would include additional costs for doing the repairing and retrofitting from other sources or that used by the district. So it expands a little bit of the additional cost that may be included as an approved transportation cost in the formula. The DEQ indicates that for the 0709 biennium, about 20 school districts are in the process or have retrofitted 370 school buses using almost $800,000 in grant money.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Our first witnesses would like to testify together, Tricia Smith, Bob Russell, and Ralph Groner. It's a coalition we don't see very often. Well, at least in part. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith, and I represent Oregon School Employees Association. I'm happy to be here with you in support of Senate Bill 610. And you're right, Madam Chair, I usually can keep them out of the room, but today they just had to be here with me. Actually, the reason that you see the three of us sitting together is because we worked very hard together in 2007 on House Bill 2172, which established the clean diesel program in the state, and then we spent the interim working together on the DEQ task force that developed the implementation rules for that bill. And we're back with you today to ask you to modify a little piece of the bill dealing with how school districts are reimbursed for their transportation costs as they relate to clean diesel retrofits. When the bill was passed in 2007, we envisioned school districts as being partners with DEQ in retrofitting our school buses so that the carbon particulates that are so heavy in the air inside the school bus as well as outside the school bus are removed. We have technology now that allows for that to happen if the bus is newer than 1993 year. And school buses that are newer than 2006, that is, those that were produced in 2007 and later, come equipped with this equipment on them already, so we don't have to do anything with them. But the older buses do need this equipment, and there are folks behind us that can talk to you about the health benefits of retrofitting school buses, but Washington study just concluded, they've done all their school buses, and they have concluded that they have received a cost benefit of 20-1 in terms of increased health benefits to children. And they didn't even test their school bus drivers. So Senate Bill 610 is meant to correct language that we attempted to put in 2172 and make sure that school districts are doing this properly according to how our money moves. In the original bill, a school district could hold out. You may remember in the transportation formula for school districts, I should start there because you haven't talked about that this session. School districts are reimbursed by the state for their approved transportation costs. The state mandates that they transport students to and from school, and they are then reimbursed for those costs by the state as part of their state school fund. When we passed 2172 in 2007, we said in the bill that the grant money that a school district would receive from either the state or the federal government to retrofit school buses would be held outside of that formula so that they could then receive their full transportation grant, and that would incentivize, we thought, school districts to spend money in this program. We've since learned that they cannot receive a state grant and then also receive a reimbursement for the cost of the retrofit, both from state funding sources. So 610 fixes that, and it says clearly that school districts may receive a federal grant to retrofit their school buses with these diesel particulate remover things, and that they would not be penalized by having that amount reduced from the state school fund. But it takes out the part of 2172 that allowed that to also happen with the state grant. There's a state clean diesel grant as well. But apparently we cannot hold that piece out of the transportation fund. So what we're doing is just cleaning up the language so it complies with our finance laws.
Now, Trish, who said you couldn't take the money, that you couldn't treat the state money that way?
The Department of Education, and Steve Hewlett is here, and he'll be testifying, and he can give you some more clarity on that.
Great. Okay. All right. Who wants to talk next?
Quiet, Bob.
You're going to define that diesel particulate thingy?
That's things.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. When we worked together on 2172 last session, one of the priorities we actually put in the bill were school buses so that we could clean up the air that our children breathe. And we were very disappointed during the interim to learn that that wasn't working. So I'm here to support Senate Bill 610 so that we can get back to cleaning up the air that our children breathe. The state was very fortunate to receive $300+ million recently from the economic stimulus, the federal economic stimulus package, that is just for this purpose. So that money will go into the clean diesel program. It's federal money, so the school districts will be eligible under 610 for those dollars, and we can get those school buses cleaned up. And that thingy is a particulate trap.
Thank you. And so, but they would still be able to use it because it's federal money, even
yes.
Without 610. Is that correct? Or is it?
Madam Chair. Probably, because it is federal money, and federal money is allowed under the existing law. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to clean up here, and we're trying to clean up the language so that there isn't confusion in districts, so that they know what they can and cannot do under the funding formula.
Okay. Anybody else want to ask a question before we move on to Mr. Groner? Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a bit of a throat problem, I'll try. For the record, Ralph Groner would ask me, our relationship with the group is that part of my portfolio is DEQ, and so I've worked with Kevin Downing and Tricia and Bob on his little group. Mr. Downing called me this morning and said, make sure you're here supporting this. But frankly, Tricia already alluded to the state of Washington. He said they fund 100%. The statistics in, all I'm going to do is add to that, show that for every dollar they've spent on clean air with school buses, it saved them significant dollars in health care costs. So that data is available to you. Many states are now funding this totally. I don't think you sat in the committees that heard the health implications of this, but we focused on open crank case buses, those with the open crank up front, which I can only say have significant health risks to kids, and those health risks include asthma and a significant increase in that in Oregon. It also includes retrofitting, so we fixed that with these funds, but we also fixed the tailpipe, and you retrofit the tailpipe. The only thing I can say is Kevin wanted me to pass on to you Mr. Clean Diesel, frankly, in the country in a lot of ways. He's highly renowned. That we have 42,000 kids on S-CHIP here in Oregon. That's his number. He said, quite frankly, it is related to clean air inside the bus. And we have too many children, especially on long hauls, that are breathing this very dangerous kind of things. And so that was why we went to work on this in the first place. We need to make sure it's resolved and that our health care and of those children and those costs related to that are, in fact, as Washington State found, significantly reduced. And they had direct correlations to that. So we're here to support Senate Bill 610, and we would hope that you could find it in your favor to do the same.
Thank you. You said, Trish, earlier that this only works with buses that were built after 1993.
Yes.
Do you know, do most buses fit in that category?
The way the law works, Madam Chair, is that, well, first of all, let me say that if the bus was built prior to 1993, these thingies, what did you call them, cannot be attached to the bus. So if the bus is older than 1993, the only way to get the carbon particulates out of the air is to replace the bus. Mm-hmm. For buses that are 1993 through 2006, I'm sorry, they can be retrofitted with devices that will clean the interior air as well as the tailpipe air of these carbon particulates. And I'd just like to say the one thing that I found extremely moving to me when I learned about this subject was that when children are riding in a school bus that has not been retrofitted, the air inside that bus has more carbon particulates in it than the air right outside the bus. So if they were standing next to the tailpipe, they would not get the same amount of carbon particulate in their lungs that they do riding in the school bus. And children are much more susceptible to the kinds of illnesses and diseases that are caused by these carbon particulates because they breathe more, they breathe faster, they take in more air, and they have less ability in their smaller lungs to deal with the carbon particulates. So that's why when the bill was passed, school buses were given a priority over other diesel engines in the state because of the impact on children riding in the buses.
Interesting. And we do have some medical testimony, I think, coming up, but interesting to compare that with the impact of smoking in cars.
That's right.
Another favorite subject of
similar.
Mine. My question was, do you have any idea of what percentage of buses
There are.
Predate 1993.
Madam Chair, I have that back in one of my files, but not off the top of my head. Perhaps Mr. Hewlett from ODE could give you a better sense of that. There are far too many, frankly, given the improvements in safety and also the improvements in carbon particulates that have come about in later buses. The National Transportation Safety Board issues new safety standards about once a decade for school buses and just did so again. And so we have another bill that will be, we hope, moving through this process that requires school districts to set up a replacement policy for school buses because after about 12 years or so, it costs more to operate an old bus than it does to buy a new one. And we hope that that will help us get rid of these old buses. That plus the grant money that allows us to replace old buses that can't be retrofitted. With those two things in place, we believe that we can make some really positive inroads in getting those old buses off. I don't know how many there are.
Can these retrofit funds also be used to replace buses?
Yes, ma'am, they can.
So they will be able to replace buses outside the formula under this?
Yes.
For reasons of diesel cleanup?
Yes, ma'am. Assuming we had enough money to do that.
Yeah, big assumption these days.
Big assumption.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Haas, did you want to comment on that other matter? We are honored to have the chair of the Education Committee on this panel. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, I think we'll go a little out of order here and get Stephen Hewlett up from the Department of Education.
Good
welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of this committee. For the record, my name is Stephen Hewlett. I am the Director of the Pupil Transportation and Fingerprinting Section for the State of Oregon, and I have been very involved with this ever since the first one in 2172 that came through. And yes, we did review this report and actually had Gary Corrick from the Attorney General's Office look at this, and he is the one that gave us the opinion that by using grant monies and then getting reimbursed for those grant monies, it, you know, in his terms, was like double dipping, and so that was against some state laws that you couldn't get paid for and be reimbursed for the same amount of money. You were actually getting more money. And so that was one of the problems with the previous bill, that this one helps to clarify and get rid of those issues so that there's not a problem with the, you know, anything coming back on us later. Yes, we have reviewed it, and this language does help clarify those grant monies and how that the reimbursement from the state school fund will be affected. At this point, we don't know how much it'll cost because it'll depend on how many dollars school districts apply for, so it'll be as they see it. Of course, as you know, that we are going to be able to have access to some of those funds that for the stimulus. It's also geared directly for this as far as retrofitting and or replacing school buses that are pre 93. You know, that are after 93 or pre-93. Retrofitting of older buses only helps to eliminate just the harmful exhaust coming out, but also eliminates those fumes that are inside the bus. One of the problems is with the particulates that come out through the breather tube underneath on the engine. This closed ventilation, what it does is it puts it back in the engine and then forces it out the tailpipe. Previous buses, that pipe just kind of dumps out underneath it, and those fumes can basically generate underneath the body of the bus and can, while they're sitting there idling or so, can leak through the side and get into it or up along the windows and get into it. And, of course, we have a closed area, and it's hard for that air, you know, those particulates to get back out of the school buses. So we do have looked at this, and we would give our blessing on passing the Senate Bill 610. I know one of the questions that Chair Burdick had was on the percentage of buses. I don't have the exact numbers, but I can tell you on an average that pre-93 is less than, I think it's about 20% or less now, because we did pass a law 2 years ago that went into effect this year that outlawed any buses that are pre-77 to be used for school transportation. And then in the OARs, we have also kept anybody from moving buses from one district to another or bringing them in from out of state that is pre-93 also. So we are gradually trying to, you know, keep those buses newer technology, newer safety features, and, of course, newer emission standards that are being met. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those now.
Can you just help us understand what's the difference? Okay, the districts get money under the formula for transportation costs, and then they can go outside the formula for this retrofit purpose and also to buy new buses. Can you just help us understand what's inside the formula, what kinds of expenditures are inside the formula, and which ones are out?
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, we do a reimbursement. So expenditures, what we consider to be approved expenditures costs that the districts turn in, that they spend, then we reimburse them in the next school year. So, you know, anything that they spend, if they were to retrofit, let's take an example, they would retrofit a bus now, and it costs, you know, $10,000 to do 5 buses. You know, we would reimburse them at 70% or whatever the rate is of that dollars. And that's all they'd get. So the district then would have to pay some of their own money to make that happen. By getting the grant money on top of that, that helps to pay that, plus they'll get the reimbursement that will be an incentive for them to continue to do more buses down the road. So it's taking less dollars out of the general fund of the schools and less, you know, and more off of the reimbursement fund.
Is there ever a scenario where they can get more than 100% of the cost of retrofitting a bus?
Senator Burdick, no, there would never be a way that happens because everybody's either at 70%, 80%, or 90%. So they always have to, they're always below 100%.
Okay, and so do you have some kind of a process in place that if they get a particularly good grant, then the state percentage would go down? Like, for example, if somebody was at 90% and they got a very nice grant, and it ended up reimbursing them more than 100%. Do you have a process in place for letting the grant money fill in and not using the state money in those cases?
No, that wouldn't happen unless it was unless it came out of the state fund, you know, the diesel fund. Out of the state fund, that would not apply, but only the federal fund. It's basically money's on top of what we would reimburse from the state level.
So they could, using federal funds...
They would get more money, yes, but I think the bill says that it has to be used strictly for more retrofitting or replacement of school buses.
Okay. So they apply for the reimbursement at, let's say, 70%, and then you the state formula reimburses them 70%, and then let's say they get a really nice stimulus piece that brings them over 100%. What happens then?
Madam Chair, I think that those dollars would just be kept in there. They'd have to keep them separate in their fund to be used, again, just for either retrofitting or replacing of old buses.
Okay. All right. I think we'll have staff look and make sure that that's the effect of this, because I don't think any of us have ever seen a situation quite like this in terms of the federal stimulus funds. So, okay. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you. My committee's very quiet. Okay.
Thank you very much.
We'll see if we can wake him up with David Williams from OSBA.
Welcome. Madam Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, a tall order for sure. My real purpose here is to blow off my please vote yes testimony. I haven't really had a chance to do that much, so we'll see how that goes. Just want to lend support for the bill and really, without going back into the history of this, support for the process by which there was a real collaborative effort to find dollars outside of existing state monies and methods where we can ensure the health and safety of our employees and our students, without putting additional burden and cost on school districts. I think this is a really excellent approach. Just to answer a little bit to your question about reimbursement, the way that this would normally work on reimbursement is there are two issues. There's timing, and then there's the dollars that districts seek for reimbursement under the transportation grant in the formula. A district, if they wanted to do a retrofit, would first apply for their grant to receive federal dollars to do a retrofitting project. And let's say, for simplistic sake, let's say that retrofit costs $15,000. And they got a grant for $5,000. The district then would expend an additional $10,000 to retrofit that bus or five buses or however many it is. Then they would take that $10,000 that they spent and seek reimbursement under the transportation grant for that $10,000, not the $15,000. And then, of course, they would pay, if they were a 70% reimbursement district, they would then be on the hook for $3,000 of that, and then would get $7,000 from the state via the reimbursement. And that reimbursement comes a year later after they have finished their project. That's my understanding of how that works. So you don't have – I understand the concern, and you don't have that situation where a district would be getting more than 100% of the cost of the project.
Okay, I see. So the grant money comes in first, and then they fill in, and then they get reimbursed. So it sounds like they would always be under 100. Would that?
That is my understanding. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No. Good bill should pass.
Question. Thank you, and thank you all for your work on this. This is diesel particulates are just awful. They're just as bad as cigarette smoke, and it's nice. We've got one more witness coming up who maybe will be able to shed light on some of the health studies, and that would be Margie Hoffman.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today. And just want to echo what the other people who have testified
Will you give your name?
For the record, my name is Margie Hoffman, and I'm representing the American Lung Association of Oregon. We've been working on the clean diesel program. We worked very hard in the 2007 session to help establish the program because cleaning up fine particulate matter from the air is one of the best ways to protect the lung health of all Oregonians, particularly children. The reason that children are more susceptible to asthma and other diseases, lung diseases, is that their lungs are not yet fully developed, so fine particulate matter affects them more. When I was growing up, I lived in the country, and I rode the school bus an hour to school and an hour from school. So we're very interested in retrofitting and replacing engines, starting with rural school districts and then moving inward so that kids who are on the bus for a couple of hours a day are not exposed to fine particulate matter. Asthma rates in Oregon, they're approaching 8.5%, which is close to 73,000 children. So we really are working to do everything that we can to limit their exposure to fine particulate matter. And I'm happy to answer any questions. There's a longer explanation of why it's important.
Some reference was made to some studies that showed a cost-benefit in terms of health. Do you know anything about those studies of children?
I don't have any details for you. I'd be happy to provide the committee with more information about that.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up. I'd like to see that for several purposes.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anything that's peculiar about emissions from a school bus engine as opposed to a diesel engine in a truck or a pickup?
Chair Burdick, Senator Morse, not to my knowledge, which is why we also work to retrofit and replace engines for trucks as well. We work kind of across the board to reduce fine particulate matter in the air, whether that be a point source polluter, whether that be a school bus engine, or whether that's a trucking engine. And I've really enjoyed working with the Truckers Association on retrofitting and replacing those engines as well. Does that answer your question?
Just as a comment, Madam Chair, the smell of the diesel exhaust from the back end of the bus is much different than the diesel exhaust that comes out of the stack vertically on a truck. And I personally I can't really stand it to pull up behind a school bus just because of that rank odor. And I wondered if there was something unique about school buses and their diesel engines. So apparently not.
Might be the placement of the exhaust pipe, with the higher pipe on a truck. Mr. Russell is in distress over any of his comments. You can why don't you come up and answer that? That's actually a good question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. There isn't really any difference between a diesel engine in the school bus or in a truck if it's manufactured in the same year. The problem is, as you heard earlier, school buses, we have 20% of them that are older than 1993. And the reason you can't put the retrofits on diesels that are older than 1993 is because they had mechanical carburation. We didn't go to electronic engine controls until 1994, and that was the first step in cleaning up the exhaust from diesels. In order to put the particulate trap on, you have to be able to reprogram the engine. And you can only do that with an electronic controls. So then we've been gradually, I think I testified before this committee earlier when we were talking about the Betsy tax credits, that we've been going through a process of cleaning up the exhaust from diesel engines. 94 was the first year with the electronic controls. In 2004, we dropped the NOx dramatically in those engines. 2006, we went to ultra-low sulfur diesel. 2007, all engines now on highway engines, which would be school buses and trucks, have particulate traps. And then in 2010, we have the last version of engine, which dramatically will drop NOx again. And I think I said to you before that at that time, the exhaust from a 2010 diesel engine will be cleaner than the air in downtown Portland, and that we were going to route the exhaust into the cab of the truck to keep our drivers healthy.
I missed that part.
So, Senator Morse, I think what you're smelling are the older school buses.
Yeah,
and because it's coming out from underneath, you're getting a blast of it in your automobile, whereas truck exhausts normally go up and you don't. It dissipates in the air before it gets into your car. But the newer ones, whether it be a school bus or a truck, they smell much sweeter.
Senator Morse, we would have expected you to know that answer since the year.
Yeah.
At least about the trucks.
Well, yeah. But it does have a different odor by its horizontal transmission as opposed to the odor that's going out. And I think it's the length of that. And I drive a diesel pickup, so I'm feeling bad now.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. Okay. Anybody else want to talk on this one, Senate Bill 610? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on this and bring this bill back later. Okay, now we're going to change economists here. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 181.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as you recall, Senate Bill 181 deals with intercompany transactions for corporations. And basically, the base case scenario is that these transactions are not to be included in the calculation of tax. And generally, if they are, you have an expense when one member pays another member for the use of an intangible asset. If they are included, there's no effect on taxable income because you have expenses and sales being included in the same return. But what can happen sometimes is that if there is a related member that's not part of the unitary group who owns the intangible asset, they receive income from the sale of the use of that asset. And the consolidated return reflects the expenses. And so in the Department of Revenue, under current statute, they do audits, and if they uncover these cases, they add back those expenses and then bill the taxpayer the difference. So what the bill essentially does is clarify existing law and existing interpretation of rules that they're allowed to do this. The intent is to make it a little clearer for taxpayers
okay. That
this is supposed to happen. And then there's also a credit contained in the bill so that if the related member paid tax on that income, then the credit on the consolidated return reflects that.
Okay. This is fairly complicated. We have Deborah Buchanan in the audience. Deborah, do you want to come up and see if you have anything to add to that? Whether there was a particular case that brought this forward or, you know, why we're seeing this today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. As staff mentioned, we have a number of taxpayers that we have audited and made adjustments under ORS 314-295, the authority in that statute. So we have seen this situation where companies don't follow the instructions in the administrative rule that we have and fail to add back an expense, so the adjustments are made. This, again, adopts a uniform recommendation of the Multi-State Tax Commission and places that into the statute. So,
and how long has this been in the administrative rules?
That is an excellent question. Madam Chair, I don't have that information with me, but I can get that answer for you. The original statute, 314-295, has been on the books since 1957, amended in 1991, but I don't recall when we adopted an administrative rule for
but
that.
But it's been quite a while that the rules have been in.
Several years at least. Some of the data that was presented to me, I think some of the adjustments were made in tax year 1999, so it has been at least that long that we've had made the adjustments.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to get a sense of how long they've been in effect. Okay, anybody else have any questions of Ms. Buchanan? Okay. Senator Morris, I could use a motion here.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 181 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 181 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Rosenbaum, would you like to carry
yes,
this?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I think that finishes our agenda, so we are adjourned.